Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can follow the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. Thanks so much for being here, and thanks so much for making Pack-A-Day part of your daily routine. Truly means a ton. Of course, make sure to like, subscribe, comment, give those five-star reviews. We always appreciate that a ton. Today, we're going to be talking to the one and only Carmen Vitale from Fox Sports, breaking down the NFC North and this huge matchup with the Minnesota Vikings this upcoming weekend. So without any further ado, here is my conversation with the one and only Carmen Vitale. I'm joined now by the one and only Carmen Vitale. Of course, you can find her on Fox Sports as a host on Fox Sports Radio, as an NFL reporter for Fox Sports, and of course, she's our resident NFC North expert. You can find her on Twitter at Carmi V. Carmen, welcome back. How the heck are you doing?
I'm great. I'm glad to be here.
I am glad you are here as well. It is always amazing chatting with you. We have a lot of NFC North stuff to discuss this week. And of course, a huge early season matchup in the NFC North between the Packers and Vikings as well. But we'll get to that eventually. I want to kick off this week with the Detroit Lions. And it's been an interesting start to the season for them. They are off to a 2-1 start, get a victory over the Arizona Cardinals this past week, 20-13. Offense hasn't exactly been where we've expected it to be, I think, over these past couple seasons. It's been off to a little bit of a slower start, but your thoughts on the Lions this past week against Arizona and through 3 weeks so far?
Yeah, I mean, that was kind of a hard fought, one of those get-right games, and it's good that the Lions are showing the resilience that we've come to know from them. I didn't think that there was really going to be any sort of slump this season after they got so far in the postseason last year. I thought that they would be more motivated than ever. And I think that that's true. They're just kind of still trying to figure things out. They've been dealing with injuries across the board. And this week is going to be no different, with Dan Campbell just announcing this morning that Frank Ragnow is going to be down, which I was like, I know it's a coaching term, it's a team term, but I'm like, we're not putting Frank down.
Amazing.
Just means that he won't be active this week with that partially torn pec. I did tweet as soon as that injury came out that I was like, I mean, he might miss a game, and that's going to be about it. Where that could sideline someone for an entire season, Frank Ragnow has just played through some unimaginable injuries. But that is going to matter a ton. And we saw that last year when he missed a couple of games, that this Detroit offensive line was not the same, and therefore Jared Goff was not the same. This Detroit offense was not the same. I think Frank Ragnow, it's not hyperbole to say he's the single most important piece on that offense. And that's going to be a test this week, and we're all going to get to see it on Monday Night Football against Seattle, against a very good Seattle defense, by the way, that could be trying to take advantage of that.
I'm so glad that you brought up the injury to Ragnow, because I think this is, as you mentioned, a massive potential loss. Now, I don't know if you're a wrestling fan, but all I can think of is the Cody Rhodes torn pec from, I don't know if it was WrestleMania or SummerSlam or whatever, where he's got a huge bruise in the steel cage match. And of course he fights through and you know, does that match. And all I'm thinking is, like, Frank Ragnow is going to come out, and it wouldn't shock me if he's like on the field pregame, shirtless, showing off the torn pec with the huge bruise and everything. But yes, as you mentioned, he is going to be down this week. He is not going to play, but that is a massive injury worth monitoring through the course of this season, because two things. I think we always sort of have a little bit of this Madden mentality of, like, if the player's in this game, in the game, if they're like a 92 overall and they're in the game, they're still a 92 overall. Even if he plays at some point, if that torn pec affects him to a great degree, he's not going to be the same player, and that can still ultimately affect the Lions. So whether he plays or doesn't play, or whether he plays and isn't quite as effective, Jared Goff looks totally different, if you, and as most quarterbacks do, but he's, I think, on one of the extreme ends, kind of like Kirk Cousins as well, where if he's in the pocket clean, able to step into it, man, can he look really, really, really good. And if you get him off of that spot and creating a little bit more chaos, it looks a whole heck of a lot different. This is a massive piece for the Lions moving forward, depending upon how bad that injury is.
I mean, I don't think it's a secret that when you pressure Jared Goff, that the bad things happen, because, again, this is not a mobile quarterback, although he did take off on a couple runs last week. Had six total rushing yards on three carries. But you did see, I think, more even than Jared Goff, you look at how much this offensive line affects how well they're able to run the ball. And, I mean, this is a Lions offense that last week rushed for over 200 yards just between David Montgomery and Jahmyr Gibbs. And that's something that's very integral to their offense early on this season. And that's the way to kind of beat, especially like some of these really good defensive teams. When you look at how good Seattle is against the pass, you want to be able to take advantage of the ground game and kind of make this offense as multidimensional as possible. And that's I don't know how feasible that is when your best offensive lineman is down.
Yeah, big time. It's going to be a massive impact on the center of that line. There's no two ways about it. I think they got Amon-Ra St. Brown going this past week a little bit. I think that's going to continue moving forward. He's just an absolute stud. It's so hard to stop him. And he gets his 6, 7, 8, 9 catches seemingly every single week. And then it does seem, though, like they've got to get Laporta going in some capacity. It's been like a slow start for seemingly almost every tight end throughout the course of the league, which has been a weird year for tight end so far, but he can be such a weapon. It does feel like this week against Seattle, they've got to get him a little bit more involved and just some, whether it's run after the catch opportunities or some up the seam, he's too talented of a weapon to be this quiet so far in the season.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do think that, you know, he sustained a little bit of an injury in this last game, and you're going to see how much that's going to affect him. But he's also one of those guys that's super tough. Something about those Lions, man. They're gritty, shall we say. Their team slogan or anything.
When the alternative is that they're going to put you down, there's only
one. Yeah, right. I know. That's
tough. You're going to be tough.
That's a great point. It's either play or die, basically.
Yes, it's going to harden a player too here or there. For those who don't know, as we were mentioning earlier, the injury report came out, said they're going to put Frank Ragnow down after his injury.
And that's what Dan Campbell got to the podium and said, which is a very, like I said, a very football term. They talk about guys that are up and guys that are down. It's just not something that usually makes it to the podium, but Dan Campbell is a football guy through and through.
Yeah, and of course, Twitter had a field day with it. Sure, and let's kind of, but while we wrap up on the Lions here, this is a really intriguing and fun matchup with Seattle, who has, I think, been really impressive with their new head coach, and they're 3-0 so far. DK Metcalf is seemingly catching a 60-yard touchdown every single week. Yep. I can't wait to watch this one. Like, this is one of these premier Monday Night Football matchups we don't always get. Like, Thursday night is Giants, Cowboys, meh. But this is a really, really fun one.
Yeah, and it's going to, I think, come down to a lot of this is going to come down to Aiden Hutchinson, how much he can affect this Seattle offense, because of the fact that if, you know, you talk about weaknesses on this team, and it's still the pass defense. They have not really had an answer, despite the fact that they bolstered their pass defense with a bunch of different corners between the draft and Carlton Davis in free agent or as a trade. We haven't seen it really be effective here. And so in order to kind of protect against that, I think you need Aiden Hutchinson to wreak some havoc on Geno Smith, prevent the ball from even getting out. Because at this point, DK Metcalf versus single coverage is like a cheat code. I mean, this man has, I have the stats right in front of me. It's 155 receiving yards versus single coverage, which ranks the fourth best in the league. So that is something that you need to be wary of. And I think the best defense against that, when you do have so many question marks in your secondary, is just to prevent DK Metcalf from getting the ball in the first place.
And on the other side, and I know both these guys are a little bit banged up right now, so I'm going to be kind of keeping an eye on the injury report as well, but Byron Murphy, their first round pick, and Leonard Williams, we just talked about it. Frank Ragnow is not going to be playing in this one. And Jared Goff goes from superhero to something completely different again, when pressured, especially on the interior. To me, if Seattle can win on the interior in this game, they have a real avenue for success. And I think can beat the Lions in this one. I guess I cannot wait for this matchup. I think you got two very hard-nosed, tough teams that are going to do everything in their power to sort of out-tough the other guy. And those are the fun matchups. And this could be a black and blue, just like Jim Ross slobber knocker, if you will. Like, this is going to be a hard-nosed game that I think the physicality is going to set the tone here.
For sure.
Let's go to the Chicago Bears. We talked a lot about them last week. They have another tough loss to the Indianapolis Colts. They have 5 touchdowns on the year. Only 3 of them are on offense. They're 3 weeks into the season, of course. two of those came in the fourth quarter of last week. Now, there's glass half full, glass half empty. If you're looking at it, all right, were those two like sort of garbage time touchdowns after the Colts already had the lead? Or was this a sign, an indicator of maybe this Bears offense is finding themselves a little bit? I know you wrote an article and talked a bit about, you know, maybe Caleb Williams and Roma Dunze are starting to find their footing a little bit. Where are you at with that pairing in this Bears offense?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's coming along. That's a bright spot so far in an offense where there aren't many currently. I don't think, again, as we talked about this last week, I don't know that anybody expected it to look this bad. But when I was trying, you know, to talk about this Bears offense in the offseason, I was trying to temper expectations because I didn't think it was going to look that good to start out with. There's too much new. And I think the biggest concern for me right now is the Bears offensive line, which was supposed to be the most experienced part of the offense, was supposed to have the most continuity, really not holding up their end of the bargain. And in the beginning, it just kind of looked like there were a lot of miscommunications and they just didn't have the scheme really down and all that kind of stuff. And now you see them kind of, you saw it against Indianapolis, where they're starting to kind of pick up those stunts a little bit better than they were earlier in the season. But then guys are still getting beat. Most specifically, I'm really concerned with Braxton Jones because he is just getting walked back into Caleb Williams on a consistent basis where he is one-on-one with a defender and they are beating him outright. And this last game against the Colts, it was a rookie. And I know that Leia Tulatu is one of the guys that, you know, we all looked forward to seeing kind of come into his own. And we knew that he was one of the best pass rushers in this draft. But to see that, you know, just work so instantaneously and to see Braxton Jones not really match up against a guy in his first season in the league, it doesn't inspire a lot of confidence. And it's not giving Caleb Williams the right amount of time to throw the ball. The timing is off between just like the protection in general, the routes that he's trying to run, all that kind of stuff. So to see the relationship between Caleb Williams and Roma Dunze blossom anyway, I think is a really good sign. Yeah. And I know that, you know, throwing two interceptions before those two touchdowns came kind of leaves a sour taste in everybody's mouth about Caleb Williams' overall performance, but I really don't count those last two touchdowns as garbage time. Just because they were down does not mean they were out. That's what garbage time is. Garbage time is when you have no hope of winning the game anymore and you're you know, behind three scores at that point. That was not the case with the Chicago Bears. They had a chance all the way up until the end, clearly didn't convert, but I think it's not only the relationship with Roma Dunze, but you also saw Cole Kmet catch 6 of 7 targets, gone his way, or was it 10 of 11? He only missed one. And that was something that it was 10 of 11. See? That's right. Caleb Williams threw 52 times in this game.
That was crazy.
Which is absolutely insane for a rookie to ask your rookie to do that. So again, I'm encouraged by some things that I'm seeing from Caleb, despite the fact that things are not clicking around him, because that just means that as they start to click a little bit more, and hopefully they will, things will look a whole lot better, a lot like quicker than I think that people are anticipating. And yeah, I'm trying to just give him time. It's only been 3 games.
It's almost impossible to evaluate Caleb in any real sort of way right now, because you'd like to just evaluate him in a vacuum and just what he's doing, but everything else that's going on around him is affecting it in a very significant way. The offensive line has been brutal so far, and part of that's injuries, but part of this is, and now what, Darnell Wright is a little bit banged up this week. Yes. And there's a lot of hilarious clips that are going around. Shelton got absolutely obliterated on one play. There's of course the speed option where 4 Bears linemen are just, you know, laying all on the ground. It was not pretty. And if you have an offensive line that can't run block, and DeAndre Swift's not off to a great start, a large part of, I think, due to the offensive line as well, can't pass protect, and then you're missing Keenan Allen, and the good news is he's potentially going to be back this week, at least practicing. Yeah. One of your receivers is a rookie, and then the other is somebody that clearly defenses are making sure are not going to beat them with any sort of significance. That's who they're keen on. And it's like, all right, the line's not blocking. You can't get the run game going. One of your big receivers is out and dropped a touchdown in week 1 when he was in. And then your other guy, again, is getting taken out of the game. The other guy's a rookie. You've got a rookie at QB. It's just, there's not a lot of easy answers. And to me, it all starts up front. They have got to find a way to solidify that offensive line, get those guys playing cohesive football. And if not, it's going to be hard to evaluate everything else, because obviously the receivers can't get the ball if the quarterback's constantly under pressure. It's just like everything is just sunk from that point moving forward. forward. And I think there's talent on this Bears offensive line. I really, really do. But they are off to a really rough start, and they've got to figure out a way to get it back under control, or it's just going to be a lost season for Chicago. And kind of in that realm, you coming up, Rams, Panthers, Jaguars, Commanders, Cardinals, Patriots in the next 6 weeks. Like, that is not a murderer's row of opponents. That is a group of six games where you can make up some ground. You have the opportunity to maybe show a little bit more of what you're capable of, but it, like, this goes two ways. Like, if all of a sudden they can put a, you know, 4-2 or somehow better stretch together, like, all right, they're in the season and they're in the conversation. But if they go 1-5, 2-4 in that stretch or worse, like, that is going to be extremely excruciating for the Bears, because it does not get easier after that.
No, then they've got the Packers waiting for them on the other side of all of that. I talked a lot about that, this kind of this upcoming stretch being the little sweet spot, if you will, for the Bears to start to gel and figure things out and all that kind of stuff. I think you saw the reports too, that they're going to give Roschon Johnson an extended look or elongated look, whatever, however they said it. I do think that there's some nuance to that, given the fact that I don't think it's an either or thing with DeAndre Swift and Roschon Johnson. It was really interesting when I kind of looked up the splits between this Bears offensive line and this run scheme in particular, given how much they are running each type of kind of run scheme. It's not, they're not a heavily outside zone team. They're not a heavily inside zone team. They kind of spread the ball out. In fact, they run the draw at the highest clip in the league, and doing that with a guy like DeAndre Swift just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me, because he's not a north-south kind of in between the, like, the A gap, up the A gap runner. He's a guy you need to get out into space, and then he can make some things happen. But now that you're going to get Roschon Johnson more involved, now that you started to get Roschon Johnson involved this last week, which I don't know why it took 3 weeks to do so, now you kind of start to talk about, okay, because this run scheme is so diverse, you need a diverse group to run it as far as the guys in the backfield, especially. And hopefully that also means that the offensive line is kind of getting used to being so multiple. But if you're curious as to the splits, I mean, they are running outside zone 28% of the time, 20% of the time inside zone, and then again, a 10% running back draw rate, which I think is the really interesting kind of part. And I guess that includes QB draws too. But those were all courtesy of PFF too, all those stats. And I thought that that was really, really interesting to see that they don't really have one way or the other that they primarily lean, and how, what problems that can present for the offensive line. But once they get the hang of it, you also need backs to be able to account for that. And I think that if you can split the work between Roschon Johnson in particular and DeAndre Swift, then you can kind of start to get a cohesive run game going that Caleb Williams can actually lean on, kind of round this offense out so that Caleb Williams isn't throwing for 50 times again against this Los Angeles Rams defense, which has a really good defensive front, young defensive front, but a good one.
I will say, if you can't run against the Colts, there's not many teams you're going to face that are giving you better looks than what the Colts, as we saw, they take advantage of it. But again, they have to get something going in that direction. I do think Roschon Johnson can be a piece of that equation. And it just doesn't feel like the Bears have quite maybe the feel for where some of their personnel is, as they maybe thought going into the season. And I don't mean to beat a dead horse here, but man, some of the resources that they spent, you know, did they need Gerald Everett when they had Cole Kmet? Did they need DeAndre Swift when you had, you know, Khalil Herbert and Roschon Johnson? Like, a lot of that money invested in the offensive line maybe would have gone a whole heck of a lot further. They went the other direction. It is not paying off so far, and it's really tough to evaluate anything other than this Bears defense, who continues to play some pretty darn good football despite not having an offense to support them.
Yes.
And they did draft maybe a generational punter. We'll see if they got the generational quarterback, but they may have got a generational punter.
So they were going to need him, man. Torrey Taylor just killed. And he almost got hurt too. He got running into the kicker in this last game, and I was just like, no.
The one thing.
No.
Not the punter.
You're not the punter. Anybody but the punter.
Let's talk about the Vikings real quick, and then the Packers, and we'll transition into this game, of course. Packers, Vikings. Dominated the Houston Texans. And I mean, dominated the Houston Texans. This Brian Flores defense is as advertised. 30 points allowed on the season through three games. And two of those teams are the San Francisco 49ers and the Houston Texans, two teams that are able to usually put up some points on offense. This has been an astounding effort from this Vikings defense so far. You were all over it last year when we talked a ton about Flores' defense early in the year. You were all over it saying, hey, they're going to need a little bit of time to gel, but once they gel, look out. Then they gelled, and that middle of the season was amazing. And then the Vikings season, because of the quarterback play, kind of went into the tank, and they didn't have anything left towards the end of the year. Some teams maybe took advantage of their defense a little bit more, but coming out of the gates this year, especially with the additions again of Grenard and Van Ginkel and Dallas Turner, et cetera, Stephon Gilmore, Blake Cashman, we can go on. They are firing on all cylinders, and it is a fun defense to watch. Week 3 is officially in the books. Green Bay has moved to 2-1 on the season. Malik Willis has been beyond unbelievable. Jordan Love is making his way back, and all is right in the football world. Now we get set to head into Week 4. It's a huge division rivalry game, and it's another great opportunity to do some winning with Prize Picks. Now we are wrapping up September, so you are running out of time to take advantage of the current promotion. One Caleb Williams passing yard gets you one win on Prize Picks every week in September. That's right, only 1 yard gets you an automatic win. And listen, it has not been pretty for Caleb Williams so far, but I still like the opportunity of Caleb Williams getting 1 yard this coming week. And of course, with Prize Picks, you can win 100 times your money with as little as 4 correct picks. And Prize Picks is the only real money daily fantasy platform with an injury insurance policy so that your lineups stay in play even if one of your players gets injured. If your player leaves the game in the first half and doesn't return, your picks stay alive. Now, I don't need to tell you that I'll be going with Caleb Williams again, but I'm also going to be going with Jaden Reed in Week 4. He's going to have a big game against this stellar Minnesota defense. But whoever you choose, the best part is that you can download the Prize Picks app today and use code PACKADAY for a first deposit match up to $100. That's code PACKADAY on Prize Picks for a first deposit match up to $100. So what are you waiting for? Pick more, pick less. It's that easy with Prize Picks.
It's so fun. And I think we talk a lot about, like, last year, they obviously blitzed at the highest clip of any team in the league. And they weren't necessarily, though, they were kind of middle of the road in pressures. And so you didn't kind of see the pressures and the sacks come out of all of that blitzing. Now, Brian Flores is blitzing at about half the rate he was last year. And yet they lead the league in so many different defensive metrics at this point when it comes to pass rush stats, that it's finally kind of coming, you know, into its own. And it took a little while. Again, it goes through these players. It puts a lot of autonomy on these players to know what they're seeing on the field and be able to adjust. Also, I think Brian Flores is just kind of stretching the boundaries with which we think of different player roles. Yeah. You have showing a cover zero look with everybody up on the line of scrimmage. And then somehow you drop these guys all the way back and they're covering deep halves 3 seconds later. And for a guy like Harrison Smith, who is basically my age, I mean, I don't know how he's doing it. This is absolutely incredible to just see, like, the fountain of youth in these players. But it does require a lot of anticipation, communication, all of that kind of stuff, because Brian Flores changes things up so incredibly much, presents so many different looks, and it's really, really hard on opposing quarterbacks to diagnose what they're seeing on the field, because it changes so drastically from the pre-snap look they give you to what they actually run. That is why I think I would take this defense over just about anybody right now. I know Pittsburgh's defense is incredible and they're just locked down, but they absolutely rely on their guys beating your guys. Yep. It's worked for them because their guys can beat your guys. But Brian Flores is doing something that is just, it's almost poetic in the way that you get to watch it and morph into all these different things. And I think what's also going kind of under the radar is that this Vikings defense is really good against the run too. Yep. They have 4 rushes allowing 10 or more yards, which is the second fewest behind just the Ravens. And they're only allowed 214 rushing yards. That's the second fewest in the league. Only 1 rushing touchdown has been allowed. So that's something that, especially when you talk about moving towards this week, that is going to be kind of, I think, one of the biggest things to watch here is just how good this Vikings rush defense is against what the Packers are inevitably going to try to do, I feel like, even if Jordan Love is out there.
Totally agree. There's so much I want to cover there because, when you have everyone walked up to the line of scrimmage, it's going to be hard to run too. Like, it's, you think of them as a pass rush defense, but you look at the end zone view of this team when they're playing defense, and it's just everyone's right there. And it's like, good luck. And we talk in Green Bay, and Matt LaFleur talks in Green Bay about the illusion of complexity on offense and how you're not doing things super complex, but there's the illusion of it that makes it look,
a lot of window dressing, a lot of, yes.
Exactly. On the defensive side of the ball for Flores, you mentioned they're not bringing as much pressure. they don't need to because they have the illusion of pressure on every single play, where even when they're only bringing four, it feels like they're bringing six. You're almost anticipating like they're going to bring six. And that's what's like scary about it. And the thing is too, is they might be bringing four, but so many times they are overloading certain sides and that you don't know what side it's going to come from. So it might be that they're only bringing four, but they're bringing four all from the right or four all from the left or four right in the middle and just overwhelming an aspect of your line that you just can't get everyone. And like, that's where it is so intriguing and so difficult to plan against. I actually played a game. I might tweet something about this later. I might try to do this on Twitter or maybe on YouTube. We'll see. But like, I literally played a game with myself of like, I did the end zone view on a pass play and did it right before the snap. I'm like, how many guys are coming and who's coming? I'm like, how can, like, let's see if I can even remember. And I'd be like, you have no idea. And
all
of a sudden, like, I think these four, and then all of a sudden it's like six coming at you. Or it's like, I think these three just might be, and it's, or like you think it's eight and then it's three. It is unbelievable. I have no idea how you decipher it in real time. Green Bay did a great job of last year in their second game against Flores, taking what was there, hitting the flats, protecting, hitting some deep shots down the field when given the opportunity. But I think this is going to be a much tougher task this week against this revamped, I think, even Flores defense from what we saw a season ago.
Yeah, I think even the other wrinkle with Flores' defense too is that he brings whoever. It's not just like you can count like the down linemen and be like, okay, this is who we have to set the protection against. You don't know. I mean, you literally have seen corners covering deep halves instead of safeties, and then because the safeties were up and they were rushing. It's like, even if you can decipher that there are four people coming or five people coming, whoever, like however the rush is, you don't know which four or five or six for that matter. He isn't afraid to get his DBs involved in the pass rush. Linebackers, we've seen what Blake Cashman can do. Andrew Van Ginkle is just kind of the Swiss Army knife in Flo's defense. I think he's loving being back in Flo's defense from Miami. And he's just, I mean, they line him up all over the field. You don't necessarily know where he's coming from. He's going to be lined up. He kind of drifts and motions. I mean, like, basically Brian Flores operates this defense as if it were an offense, and you were putting all those fun little window dressings on it, because he does put his defenders in motion, even especially after the snap. So it's really, really hard to, and again, even when you're watching tape on these guys, like, there aren't any overwhelming tendencies like, okay, well, when so-and-so is walked up on the line of scrimmage, that means he's coming and this dude is dropping. Or like, you can't really pick up on any certain tells even of what Brian Flores' players are about to do. And that again stems from the fact that these players themselves have so much power over what they are about to do on the field. They can audible on the field based on what they are seeing. It takes a tremendous amount of intelligence to run Brian Flores' scheme and to play in it. But the result is, again, just not having tendencies that you can really pick up on. And I think that that's going to continue. Not to mention, Brian Flores now gets to go up against the Shanahan McVay system that half this league runs, including the Packers. Yeah. And that is probably the worst thing that could have happened for offenses, is that Brian Flores got the opportunity to game plan, you know, in practice, I should say, in training camp specifically, because that's not what the season is for, but go up against this scheme and see this scheme up close every day, day in and day out.
And O'Connell too, doing a tremendous job on his side. And I'm sure him getting a few Flores every day, that's just iron sharpening iron. It's one of the best 1-2 combos of offensive play caller, defensive play caller, if not the best in the NFL. Yeah. Hopefully Green Bay can have something to say about that as well. We'll see what Jeff Hafley can do. He's got a way to prove himself still, but these last 2 weeks have looked a lot more promising. Before we get into just kind of Vikings Packers, just really quick, any big takeaways from Packers Titans this past week?
Yeah, again, I think that the coach of the year candidates exist both in the NFC North, and I think it's Matt LaFleur, and I think it's Kevin O'Connell. It's so interesting, and this was actually something that my friend AQ Shipley brought up on the Pat McAfee show, was basically LaFleur went back into his 2018 playbook when he was with the Tennessee Titans with Marcus Mariota to kind of figure out what he could do with Malik Willis, given that Malik's skill set and Marcus Mariota's skill set at the time were very similar. They were both young players, all of that. And it's worked so far, I should say, to perfection. This has become a run first offense. This is why you have a guy like Josh Jacobs too. But just kind of the complexity of the run game, even with not asking Malik Willis to do a ton, you have Jaden Reed coming out of the backfield. You have Bo Melton coming out of the backfield. You have all of these guys that are involved in this run game, and an offensive line that started the year kind of knowing I mean, I think that there was week one, they were still trying to figure out exactly who was, there was a couple of guys that were rotating and all that kind of stuff. That is no longer the case. This offensive line is really, really good. And they are doing their job on the ground, especially in their run blocking. And that is what is so different too about what people have come to expect from the Packers and from Matt LaFleur in particular. They operate completely differently with Malik Willis than they do with Jordan Love. And in order to do that and make those adjustments literally with a week's notice, I mean, I cannot overstate how impressive that is. And to have the wherewithal to do that and to have your guys be bought in and be able to execute it on top of that is just a complete testament to Matt LaFleur. And I'm so impressed by him. It's going to be very interesting to see if Jordan Love does indeed come back this week. I still think they're going to lean on the run game because you just don't want to put everything, all the pressure on Jordan Love in his first game back while he is, even if he's back, still dealing with that knee injury.
No, I think you're totally right. And I think that's the right way to go about it. And just going against this Flores defense, you got to stay balanced. If you get in any long down and distances and become predictable, you are so far behind the eight ball and he is going to bring every pressure known to man. And that's just not what you want to see, especially with a quarterback who might not have a full mobility, you know, at his disposal either. So that is going to be a huge aspect of this one. So as we transition into and as we kind of wrap up here, Packers Vikings noon game. In Lambeau Field, Packers currently 2.5 to 3 point favorites. As we talked about, some of the really great coaches in the NFL right now, from Flores and O'Connell to LaFleur, and I'm not sure we can quite put Halfley there yet, but it's like I said, it's been an impressive couple of weeks. This just has heavyweight fight and a real NFC North battle, and I've been geeking out about this one all week. I can't wait to watch it.
I know, same. I mean, this is by far my most anticipated matchup, and it has been now, honestly, for a couple of weeks, especially when, like this last week, when you didn't know Jordan Love was going to play, I'm like, why risk it when you have this, like, kind of built-in marquee matchup in the NFC North to re-debut him, against, and I do think that this is just going to be one of those games that's like, it's just one of those all-timers, because both teams are playing so incredibly well. Very interested to see just kind of, particularly this Justin Jefferson, Jair Alexander matchup. I mean, Jeff Halfley has equipped his guys this year. It couldn't have been more seamless. You have your matched your interception totals from last season. Yep. The Packers have already through three games. It's absolutely wild at the rate that these guys are taking the ball away. And Jair Alexander already has two interceptions, which bodes well for this matchup against Justin Jefferson, because this has been so back and forth between the two of them. I mean, sometimes I feel like more times than not, though, Justin Jefferson has got the better of Jair. But at this point, Jair is playing at a level that we haven't seen in the last couple of years, quite honestly. And it's just going to be, both guys are, Justin Jefferson's a relatively healthy, as healthy as he ever is, I suppose. And say with Jair Alexander. So you just, I cannot wait to see how that all kind of materializes, in particular, outside of just kind of the Brian Flores defense and what you're going to do against it, yada, yada, yada. I think the singular matchup I'm looking forward to most is JJ and Jair.
Yeah, I think so too. I think Ja is going to be completely geeked out for this one, and he's going to have his A game going. He understands and he knows this is a marquee matchup for him. And I guarantee too, I know Jeff Halfley is going to want to mix and match and do some different things against Jefferson. You have to throw different looks at this offense, but I guarantee you Jair is going to be talking to Halfley saying, I want this matchup, put me over him. I want to be guarding him as much as possible. And that just makes for some must watch TV. And of course you've got Aaron Jones in the Minnesota backfield. Again, these marquee coaches going against one another. Kenny Clark has sort of owned Garrett Bradbury through the course of the last, I don't know, handful of years. So there is a lot of really intriguing stuff to kind of look at. As a last question here, what are maybe some keys to this one? I know we talked about some of the matchups, but what are the keys that you're going to be really watching for to see like what kind of ultimately decides this game?
Yeah, I think, again, a lot of it is going to hinge on Josh Jacobs' shoulders in particular. Just given the fact, like I said, even if Jordan Love is back for this, I just don't want you to have to put so much on, you know, him throwing the ball down the field, staying in the pocket, making those crazy throws off of his back foot, all that kind of stuff. I want you to be able to ease him in a little bit more. And the way to do that is just to get the ground game going. And I mean, this is... Josh Jacobs leads the league in so many things. The Packers lead the league in so many things when it comes to all of these rushing metrics, carries, yards after contact, which I think is such a huge testament to who Josh Jacobs is and what we're seeing out of him, which is a better Josh Jacobs than we've seen in the last couple of years. The biggest thing too is that the Packers are leading the league in rushes over 20 yards. So those explosive runs that just really kind of break defenses. If you can get that going against Brian Flores' defense, we just talked about how good this Minnesota rushing defense is. If you can still get those explosives, I mean, there's no reason then that you need to be putting so much on Jordan Love's shoulders if you are consistently moving the ball down the field with the ground game with Josh Jacobs.
Yeah, I think two big players in this one, Tucker Kraft and Jaden Reed. I think you can get the ball in the flats in this one. I think you can get it in the hands of those explosive playmakers. And then, you know, sometimes when Minnesota is bringing these heavy blitzes, if you don't make that first tackle, the opportunity is there to get some really good, you know, big yards after the catch. And I think those are two players in Reed and Kraft that have the ability to either make that first person miss or, in Kraft's case, run through a tackle and maybe pick up some of those extra yards. So Tucker Kraft, Jaden Reed, two big ones that I will be watching in this game as well. Carmen, phenomenal stuff as always. Tell us where we can find all of your amazing work.
Yeah, just go ahead and follow me on Twitter/X, CarmiV, and Instagram as well. Same thing. Yeah,
make sure to give her a follow. She's absolutely awesome. You're not going to want to miss anything that she's putting out there. Again, you can find her on Twitter at CarmiV. You can find the podcast at Packaday Podcast. And of course, you can find me at Andy Herman NFL. That's going to do it for Carmen and I today. But until next time, and as always, go Pack, go.